Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. I'm your host Ace, and joining me are Artura.
Hello everyone.
And Gozugos.
Goku kara no shisha, Spider-Man, Spider-String!
In today's episode, we're not talking about Spider-Man, we are talking about Battle Arena Toshinden, aka Toshinden. It's spelt slightly differently. A two-episode OVA from 1996. I chose this one because, honestly, there's so many fighting game movies and OVAs, it had to go somewhere. It was produced by Animate Film, who I can find no information about other than it being owned by retailer Animate, but it was co-produced by JC Staff, the studio behind Is It Wrong to Try and Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon, Ikki Tucson, and A Certain Scientific Railgun. Battle Arena Toshinden has a MyAnimeList score of 5.28. My summary of this is, when Eiji Shinjo learns that his brother is behind some brutal attacks, he sets out to stop the evil, the organization. Asura, what do you have?
After world peace goes awry because of an attack by a single man, Eiji Shinjo sets on a quest to find the truth behind what's happening to some of the best fighters in the battle arena Toshinden.
And goes?
Everyone's favorite.
After a guy battles a peace treaty and a funny little battle grandpa, Eiji and Kain try to stop the battling by going all up Uranus and the organization responsible for all the battles.
I had a feeling you'd bring up Lady Uranus. Well, I've scrapped the bit where I usually talk about who has played this game series. I will just explain what this game series is. Battle Arena Toshinden is a 3D fighting game series by Tamsoft that was supposed to be a Virtua Fighter killer. It was the first game of its type to let you use weapons, and all four titles came out on the PlayStation. The first two also came out on Saturn and PC. There were also three spin-off titles. This OVA is set after the events of the first two games, and partially adapts the Saturn version of the second game, which had a... It had a different story completely. So it's technically a third game, even though it's supposed to be the second. Personally, I was aware of this series, but as with most fighting games, I might have played a demo, maybe.
I honestly never heard of it. Is it even going to this day? I couldn't find any information on that.
No, as I say, they were released on the PlayStation, so that was a long time ago.
Oh, no, I mean, like, you know, a lot of the fighting games we've covered, they actually continue to go to this day. So I was wondering if this one had too, but I guess there's my answer.
No, most people have probably forgotten it exists. It was supposed to be a Virtua Fighter killer. It was not.
I think it's worth noting that it's basically a precursor to Soul Edge and Soul Calibur, which are basically the fighting game that you can use that you use weapons in instead of like being just hand to hand stuff.
I don't see the similarities other than the game genre, the fact you use weapons, there's a scantily clad woman who uses a whip.
I mean, that's a lot of similar tropes, right? I mean, there were, like, on PS1, there were several fighting games that focused on using weapons and blood and whatever, swords, stuff.
Battle Arena Toshinden came out at the start of 95, and Soul Edge came out towards the end of 95, so it's entirely possible that they were inspired, or they had similar ideas behind them. Depends how long it took to develop them.
I mean, again, you had several games that were similar to Soul Calibur, but now you only have Soul Calibur, so it's like, I imagine that they were inspired by those other games as they went on. And that's why you have Soul Calibur and you don't have those other series anymore.
Yep. Well, Battle Arena Toshinden, we start, as both those other summaries and not mine mentioned, at the signing of a peace treaty between two warring countries. Not told which, but I mean, it's the 90s. We've got to assume it was about the United States of America and the USSR. Wait, was it still the USSR in 96? Russia, in any case.
Weren't they like fictional nations? Because when I saw the flags or the crests or whatever, I couldn't tell you which ones they were. Like, they seemed like made up. And I think both sides were Asian.
Well, I don't think we find out where any of this takes place, which countries or anything. Just there are some signs that are in Japanese at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But the peace treaty is attacked by a single man who we soon learn is named Sho. And the president shouts, "There's someone on the bridge," pointing up. And that's not what that part of the ship is called. That's the mainmast or composite mast. Depends on what type of aircraft carrier it was.
Oh, look at you, expert in fucking carriers.
No, I just looked up Google Images and there were diagrams. The show destroys all opposition, and we cut to, because this is further on in my notes, but something I couldn't help notice was that all of the scenes in this, in both these episodes, are very, very short. Like, something happens and then we move on, something happens, we move on. So we cut to Mr. Fo doing magic tricks for kids while a drug deal is going on in the foreground.
You can hear the drug dealers talking. Like, yeah. the focus is clearly supposed to be on the grandpa, but you can hear the guys in the foreground talking. Like, who cares?
Yeah, I didn't watch this in the sub version, and the subtitles didn't mention it, but the dub has this guy saying, "Put some of this in your tea and you'll kick everyone's butt." It's like steroid something.
No, I didn't hear that.
At least we know that they were selling martial arts drugs. So they stayed with the theme.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that. Mr. Fo spots Sho and fights him in an alleyway with Wolverine claws for some reason. And then Sho uses Mr. Fo's own technique against him and beats him because of that one move, presumably. We don't actually see Sho win or what happens to Mr. Fo, and we find out in the second episode, towards the end, what happened to Mr. Fo.
So you're going to have to stay tuned to... No? No?
Next, we are introduced to Eiji Shinjo, the main character.
For the longest time, I thought his name was AJ. I did not understand what they were saying at all. I was like, AJ? That's such a weird name for this.
He's stood in a desert and he's trying to... No, he is remembering the Toshin tournament from the previous year. He fought someone called Gaia, who appeared to be evil, and he was doing his best Darth Vader impression, "Join me and together we will rule the world," type thing. He didn't specifically rule the world, but he did say, "Join me."
From what I could understand, he organized this tournament to recruit fighters to help them, to help him fight the organization. I didn't look that up. I just watched the thing and listened to the dialogue. That's what I got.
Well, spoilers for the first game, first and second game, the organization is the criminal organization behind the company that runs the Toshin in the tournaments.
It's Shadowloom.
And the organization is all that's left once the Toshin tournaments are shut down or something. I don't know. AJ is surprised that Gaia knows his brother Sho for some reason. But before he can ask him anything, along comes Chaos, a person, not the concept, and all of Chaos's men. Chaos is almost immediately killed, and Gaia disappears, telling AJ to train himself, like he's fighting Goku or something. After the flashback, Kaien is introduced and fights AJ, but turns out it's a friendly duel. They're not actually trying to kill each other, just cut each other with their swords. And once that fight's over, it's not a very long fight, we cut to Sho killing, well, not killing, I thought killing at first, that's why it's in my notes, attacking Mondo. It's left vague what happens to him, because we cut back immediately to Kaien and AJ as AJ's laying flowers at his father's grave, which is a weird scene to introduce us to. Probably means more if you've played the games.
That's something I felt throughout most of this OVA, is that I think this would have been a lot better if I actually understood anything that was happening at first and cared for the characters. It did seem like a lot of people were put in here that I just unfortunately did not recognize or care for because I didn't play the games.
Yeah, all of the characters in these episodes are from the first two games. the third and fourth games introduced more characters.
Yeah, I was really sad because it felt like it was decently done, and I would have loved to be able to actually, you know, care for these characters and experience it as a fan of it, rather than just an outsider that had no idea even what this was to begin with.
Well, Kyan and AJ talk about how someone is targeting the top fighters of the Toshin tournament, and they work out that it's probably Sho, using absolutely no evidence to prove it. And then we cut to Rungo Iron, I think his name was, who's been abducted to some kind of cell and gets attacked by a resurrected Chaos. And we see the control room of this cell thing while the fighting's going on, so we don't get to see the interesting stuff. Where we meet Lady Uranus, who's watching, and I wrote, it's made clear that she's in charge of whatever organization brought Chaos back. And then shortly after we find out it's called The Organization.
I was really confused by that at first too. Yes, the website called The Website.
We also see that Sho is in the control room. Chaos finishes off Rungo. And then we see AJ's on his motorbike, and we have a flashback to minutes prior where he turned up at Rungo's house. Rungo is badly hurt. He's at home with his wife and child. So AJ promises the child that whoever hurt Rungo is going to pay, and then he motorbikes off and arrives in front of some kids playing football, so he joins them to play football.
I found that so weird. It's like I got carried away, I'm sorry.
Because he was winning. This woman, Sophia, turns up, and maybe AJ was looking for her? I wasn't too sure about that.
They said that he was going to look for her in like the previous scene. Or something.
Glossed over at that bit. I was so taken aback where he was just playing football.
Well, that happened before.
We meet Sophia, who in the games is Russian and in the dub is not. And AJ explains that the organization is doing something. So that's why he's come to find Sophia. We're briefly treated to Lady Uranus giving a presentation to some people at the organization and talking about the Man-Machine project.
Which I felt should have been called the Man-Sheen, but whatever.
You should join the organization's marketing department.
Man-Sheen TM?
Yeah, it was such a missed opportunity. What do you mean, Man-Machine?
Well, Machine Man is copyrighted by Marvel Comics, so... AJ has a dream about losing a fight to his brother and then goes outside to train. He's joined by Sophia. They have a bit of a chat. And then Lady Uranus uses some machine to take control of Sophia's body. So she goes back into the house and takes a shower for some unexpected nudity.
I mean, it's a trope.
Well, honestly, not only was it unexpected nudity, it was ugly. Like, oh my gosh, of all the unexpected nudity, this one's the ugliest one so far.
She joins EJ in his bedroom before trying to stab him, because obviously, naked woman, ooh, she's not going to try and stab me, but she does. He dodges and jumps through the window. She comes out immediately after him, and both of them are fully clothed.
Yeah, I noticed that too. It was horrible.
I want to just go back to the her trying to stab him. Where was she keeping that knife? Was she just keeping it in her butt cheeks?
No, you don't want to know.
Like, she was clenching them hard all this time.
I mean, she's a fighter, so she's got to have superb glute control.
And also, actually, the few frames you see where AJ jumps out the window, you can see that he's covering himself with his shirt or whatever, which I guess made sense, but it doesn't make sense that he has shoes on. Was he sleeping in those shoes?
I assumed he was wearing trousers at the very least, because he was topless in the bed, but jumps out and, yep, this is my fighting costume from the Toshin tournament.
Yeah, just everyone's always ready to get fully clothed for battle, I guess.
I imagine that the window was acted like the Batpole in the 60s Batman TV show. you go through the window and suddenly you're dressed.
I mean, I'm going to give pass to him, but not her. Unless she was keeping her costume clenched between her butt.
It's possible.
I would, like, drag behind her, probably. Like, assuming that's a one piece everything.
They have a bit of a fight. AJ, well, she fights him. He doesn't really fight her until AJ realizes she's probably being mind controlled. So he hugs her, which breaks her free. And Lady Uranus takes the machine off because a hug deactivated the brainwashing or something. And we get a brief glimpse of more unexpected nudity because you got to control that machine in the buff, apparently.
There's some things I have to plug in, some places you wouldn't be able to.
That's why she needed to have the shower.
She saw Ghost in the Shell.
Well, since Sophia didn't kill AJ, Sho attacks, and AJ realizes that Sho is under some sort of control as well. Sho attacks Sophia and reveals that they're both cyborgs or man machines or something. And because she was hurt, AJ gets his second wind, and before he can fight him, Lady Uranus shoots Sho with an arrow, which explodes him.
Game over.
It was unexpected to see just someone explode.
That's a very good point. I did not see the spontaneous combustion.
Lady Uranus taunts AJ that it wasn't really his brother and runs away. And then talks to Chaos when she's back at base, who is in a tube and seemingly conscious in said tube and would later no longer be in the tube. So we catch up with Kyan, who went to see Ellis, a circus performer, who almost kills her boss by accident when she's startled by Kyan. And the episode ends with AJ jumping into the air with his sword, presumably into the gorge he was stood above when he jumped.
I think he just returned to his home planet.
I made this note twice because we hear it twice. The end credits song is really upbeat.
It really is.
It's like a love song. And apparently it's performed by the Japanese voice actor of Ellis.
I thought it was really cute, though, honestly. I really liked it, but it's just, it doesn't fit at all.
No, it does not.
Well, it's not If I Was a Cactus song from the
It's other... not on the same lines. Not on the same level. Episode 2 opens with Gaia fighting Chaos's nameless men for seemingly no reason. And we never get a reason for it until we check it back in with Ellis, who is performing a show, because circus performer, and then goes backstage to meet AJ, who has just arrived after jumping into the gorge or returning to his home planet or whatever. Kyan and EG fill in Ellis on what's happening with the organization, and then they tell her that her data obviously wasn't worth collecting, so she threatens to murder them.
I really like that part. I really like her so much.
The pair then leave Alice, and no sooner are they outside than Chaos attacks Alice inside. We learn that Gaia is Alice's father, and that's why Chaos is there to kidnap her. But luckily, Kane and AJ came back and disguised themselves as clowns. So they jump into... Well, Chaos defeats them both with an explosion, so they do nothing. But Gaia comes to the rescue to protect his daughter, which he somehow knew was in danger. When he turns up, Ellis notices that her father's wearing a pendant, and she goes, "That's father's pendant."
Oh, well, I guess she didn't recognize him right away. And she was like, "Oh, that's his pendant, that's him over there. That's dad."
Okay, I'll buy that. My note was that it's strange she's shocked her father is wearing her father's pendant.
Yeah, I got the same thing as you. I thought it was just a father.
The pendant never factors into anything else in the entire episode. But Chaos attacks and Ellis jumps into the way and gets poisoned. But the antidote of the poison only the organization has. So Chaos leaves and nobody tries to stop him. Ellis is taken to the hospital. It looks like a random room, not a hospital. And Kyan gets interrogated in the hallway by a policewoman who's dressed like a street fighter. And we don't get her name.
Or like a stripper, really.
Kyan and AJ use a BBC news report to somehow explain that the man-machine project is happening because some people attacked a military base and quote-unquote modern weaponry couldn't stop them. And the police woman believes them, and like she's in 110%, and they're wondering how they can find the organization's hideout and get the antidote before Sophie turns up, somehow knowing where they were, offering to take them to the organization's hideout because she read Lady Uranus's mind when her mind was taken over earlier.
Well, naturally, she saw that was the plan all along, so she knew where they would be, huh?
She knew that someone would be poisoned and needs to be taken to the hospital. Yeah,
okay. Exactly.
She was just a creepy stalker woman and followed them all around, I guess.
Kyan and AJ get on motorcycles, Sophia and the still unnamed cop get in a car and travel to the hideout, which is really close, it seems. Didn't take them very long to get there.
3 hours later.
By the way, the policewoman's name is Tracy. I found that out by watching gameplay of all 4 games.
Oh.
She is never named in the episodes at all. I mean, we didn't see her in the first episode, so... But anyway, they split up. The guys drive off on the motorcycles while Sophia and Tracy stop to fight just random people. But it's not just them, because Mondo turns up to help clear the way for the guys, along with Rungo and Mr. Foe and some duke on a horse. Like, this unnamed guy comes along on a horse in the suit of armor, and then it's either AJ or Kyan think to themselves, ah, Duke. So either his name is Duke or he is a Duke.
That is honestly the problem with these things usually, yes.
Everyone's here. the Smash Bros thing.
While everyone's fighting, Gaia sneaks in and gets into a fight with Chaos. Meanwhile, Kyan and AJ split up, heading into separate towers to, you know, find out where the man-machine project is and where the antidote is. AJ finds the man-machine incubators and destroys them, causing the American Republican Party to hate him because they're unborn. Kyan joins the fight against Chaos, so Chaos uses explosion. It's super effective.
Are you sure the things in the incubator tanks weren't just tribbles?
It's not really clear what they are. It's just a collection of cells, which we're not going to get into an abortion debate in this podcast.
I mean, if there were tribbles, then he was completely justified in what he did.
He's not a Klingon, so no, he wasn't. AJ flies from one tower to the other, and when he lands, he calls himself the star of the show.
Yeah.
And reveals that they can win against Chaos by using each other's moves.
Which, honestly, that's so bullcrap. And you know it, and I know it, and everyone knows it.
Yep. In the games, you can't use other people's moves.
Not only that, Chaos was already a good fighter before he even became a man machine. So, like, why does he not? Is he not capable of retaliating on these moments? Is what I found really stupid. It's like, oh no, I'm incapable of self-thought.
Oh, because in a scene before, they said that the final stage of the process of turning him into something is removing his brain, his spot.
Right. Yeah, very good point. Never mind. I take back what I said.
So something like, now he's only going to think about fighting.
Or he's going to see, oh, this guy's attacking me, so he's going to use attack A, B, or C. And he was just prepared for that because he was stupid at that point.
Actually, a bit of a tangent, a related tangent. She says that the man-machines can defeat any fighter that they have seen fight and recorded into their database. So surely they have to send in someone to lose in a fight so they can get the data so that a man-machine can win the fight.
No, yeah, it's a very good point. I'm an idiot. I take it back.
Anyway, they win and confront Lady Uranus, And as she's explaining that she'll escape and her plans for what she'll do next, the real Sho turns up saying that he's blown up the man-machine plant, causing a chain reaction which destroys the towers.
Oh, Twin Towers.
Too soon. Also, all of the data was on a floppy disk, so that wasn't all our data.
Naturally.
Lady Uranus and Sho make their separate escapes, as do the heroes, and we see an empty imprint where Chaos landed. Just this massive chaos-shaped dent in the ground, implying that he didn't die by falling from that massive, massive tower that it took Kain 10 minutes to drive up.
That's a good point.
But the heroes are all safe. They talk about the next Toshin tournament and how they're going to try and kill each other when they see each other again.
Aww.
We cut to Kain and AJ giving the antidote to Ellis, who wakes up. And then the pair threaten to fight each other again sometime and go their separate ways. And then we get another rendition of Get You Only Love.
The best song, of course, the best closing for this.
Right, so was this a good adaptation?
I think so. There was a lot of fighting, a lot of characters.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I think pretty much. It had special moves from the games. It's partially adapted one of the plots, included all of the characters, even if it was just for literally 3 seconds right at the end. So I'll ask, did you give this a thumbs up, a thumbs down, or a meh, Arturo?
I think for me it's a thumbs up, honestly. I kind of enjoyed it despite not knowing anything about it, so I can't imagine how much I would have enjoyed it if I had known more about it.
Angles?
Yeah, I agree. Like, I really enjoyed it. Like, the pace. I always knew what was happening, and the pacing was pretty much perfect for me. Like, I never got bored.
Okay, I gave it a meh. I didn't hate it, but it wasn't particularly good. Which brings us to our new section. Did it deserve its My Anime List score? Reminder, it was a 5.28.
No, I think that's really harsh, to be honest with you. It was good enough, and again, if I had known more about it, I would have actually probably liked it a lot more. So I think 5.5 is way too harsh. We've seen worse, and it's been rated higher.
Girls?
Yeah, I mean, the scoring is... I think scoring in general is bullshit. It's rare that an animation deserves a lower average score. Like, to have your animation released, you need to reach some quality. Like, people take animation for granted at this point. Like, it takes skill, it takes a lot of work to make it seem like you have people moving like people and whatnot, you know?
Okay. I thought it was about right. It was pretty average anime. That's the reason I gave it a meh. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great.
Yeah, it's fair. Honestly, a meh would pretty much be a 5.
Right, which brings us to the end of our episode. Thank you for joining me, Arturo and Gors.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for being...
You're welcome. Thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge. And better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameKing.com, find us on social media, or listen to the Greencast podcast. Until next time, game on.